Welcome back to the Renaissance Foundation podcast, a podcast about inspiration made by the young people at our youth charity. We support young carers, hospital patients, and at-risk pupils in London. I'm Corey, a member of staff at Renaissance Foundation, and I'll be hosting today's episode. We've been hard at work recording a string of new episodes that we're going to release in the next few weeks. I can tease a few now, actually. We've got an interview with Ellie Norman, the head of F1 marketing, and we can't wait to share that. Really fun episode. And we've also been lucky enough to try out something totally new to us. We've been learning about breath work with Octavia Calthorpe, which has been really exciting. Learning how to use breathing as a tool to help overcome certain challenges and feelings of negativity. I can already feel the sessions are benefiting us, so we definitely want to share an episode with you at home so you can join in with us. We've also been hard at work delivering workshops to our young people and partner organisations. We've just had a great half-term project with a South African charity called Africa Tycoon, in which the young people from both organisations work together to create initiatives that address the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Shout out to our friends, Africa Tycoon. We hope you're enjoying the spring weather in South Africa. I can tell you, everyone in the UK is proper jealous right now. We wish it was as warm here. Now that mini Renaissance Foundation update is done, I can tell you about today's amazing episode. We recently spoke with Pranav Saneji, co-founder and director of Livewire Sport, a digital agency that creates content for brands and broadcasters to reach new audiences. They've worked with the Premier League, the FA, Wimbledon, World Rugby, Channel 4, ATP Media, FC Inter, and Tottenham Hotspur, to name a few. We really enjoyed speaking to Pranav, who shared his incredible career journey with us, starting from print journalism to the BBC to founding his own digital media agency. Pranav was full of great advice, wisdom, and positivity for the future. He also spoke about a brand new initiative Livewire launched called the Diversity in Digital Mentoring Program. This initiative looks to address the lack of representation in media. It looks at diversity in multiple ways, including ethnicity, gender, accessibility, and even geolocation. Thanks so much for speaking with our youth charity, sharing your advice and inspiring us about careers in media. We really enjoyed this chat and would love to get you back for another one, Pranav. You were really easy to talk to, and I definitely feel we only scratched the surface of what we could have spoken about. Well done for all the young people involved in this recording. Your questions were super professional and really helped us all learn something from this talk. Thank you everyone at home for listening to our podcast and supporting us. Every like, share, rating and subscriber makes a big difference to us, as we're a local youth charity making these podcasts basically because we enjoy it. If you know anyone else that would like our content, do share it with them and let them know, or point them in the direction of our YouTube channel, Renaissance Charity. Also, you can get in touch and tell us who you'd like us to interview. And also, if you want to support us, make a donation, please head over to renaissance-foundation.com. Every donation helps us support young people. Now, let's go on to today's podcast. We hope you enjoy it. I just want to start saying thank you to everyone for making today's session. So we've got a really exciting interview with Pranav Saneji, co-founder and director of Livewire Sport. So what would be really nice if we run around everyone and do our normal Renaissance Foundation introduction. So tell us your name, what year you are in school, college or uni, your passion, and then you can nominate the next person to introduce themselves. So I'll go first. My name's Corey. I'm in the school year extra. I'm 28, so I'm not in school anymore. And my passion is films. I love watching films and making films. And I'm going to nominate Angus next.
Hi, I'm Angus. I honestly don't remember my school year. I'm the one that's starting GCSE now. And I'm passionate about stop motion animating.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Angus. That's really, really good. And we followed you now on YouTube, so you got one new subscriber. Jao, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Jao. I'm going into year 12 now. I'm really passionate about music and drama, so I love the performing arts. And I'm also about to go shopping because I need some supplies for lasagna, so I'll probably be AFK for quite a bit.
Who would you like? Thanks, Charles. Who would you like to nominate next?
I don't remember who's gone, but I can't actually see who's under. I nominate Courtney.
My name's Courtney. I'm in college, and I'm photography and gaming.
You say photography and gaming?
Yeah.
Very good passions. I like that. Who would you like to nominate next?
Sat.
Cool. So thanks, Courtney. Obviously, my name's Sat. I'm on the other side of 30. And my passion is Arsenal Football Club, which is a very tough passion to have because it's up and down. So I will nominate Micaiah next, please.
Hi, my name is Micaiah. I'm 16 and I'm going into my first year of college, and I'm passionate about science and music, and I nominate Osei.
Thank you, it's really good.
So my name is Osei. I'm going into year 12. My passion, well, I'm into lots of things, music, dressmaking, art. At the moment, I'm really into just making edits, I guess. So I guess who's going to go next? Has Amani gone? Amani, have you gone?
Sorry, Osei, you said edits. Do you mean like video edits or?
As in like picture edits. As in like the one that's on my screen right now. Things like that. Yeah, and I'm working on one right now, so I'll show you guys later. Mm-hmm. Amani, have you gone?
Yeah, I'll go now.
Yeah.
So Osei. I'm Amani. I have finished school a few years ago, and my passions are baking and gardening. I'll nominate Blessed to go next.
Hi, my name's Blessed. I'm going to year 13, and my passion is music.
Hi, thank you. That's really, really good, Blessed. And Rafay's just typed his answer in the chat. He said, I'm Rafay. I'm going into year 10. Wow, that's fast, really quickly. I'm passionate about playing piano, and I nominate Rachel. Thanks, Rafay.
Hi, I'm Rachel. Thanks for joining us, Pranav. It's great to have you. My school year, unfortunately, is non-existent anymore because probably could do with going back to school at some point. And my passion is music. And the next person I'm going to nominate is Corey, because I don't think you've been.
Oh, I went at the start. So
did you?
I'm going to veto
do it again. Why not?
But I'm going to choose Natalie.
Oh yeah, hi, I'm Natalie, and I am definitely well beyond school, heading into the wrong side of 40, but still passionate about lots of things, particularly home city of Manchester. So now I'm an honorary Essex girl, I feel it's even more important to have, you know, my northern roots. Yeah, thanks so much, Pran. I'm really looking forward to listening, and I know everyone's got lots of questions to ask, so yeah, looking forward to a great chat. Thank you.
I'm Joshua, and I'm going into year 12. My passion is like physics, I'd say, right now. I'm just really enjoying learning about it.
Hi, my name's Luam, and I'm going into year 11, and my passion is like, I don't really have one, but like if like something I enjoy, I really like maths a lot. So yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm jealous because that's a very hard subject and I wish I was better at maths. I might need some lessons from you. Now that you've heard a bit about us, we just want to introduce our today's very special speaker. Pranav is the co-founder and director of digital agency Livewire Sport. And Livewire Sport recently launched Diversity in Digital Mentoring Program to educate, encourage and engage a range of talent to get into the industry represented across different groups in sport and digital. Pranav will be talking to us today about diversity in digital and media industry and his mentoring program. So we just want to say a massive thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you all. And that introduction was fantastic because it really gives me an idea of you guys and what you really love. Because ultimately, your success, your happiness comes down to that. And if I can contribute in any way, shape or form to help you achieve those goals, then, you know, I've done more than I could ever dream of, really, which I guess, you know, was probably the reason why I'm doing what I do at the moment. Just to give you a little background about me, I am well on the wrong side of 40. So my school years, I can't even remember anymore, but I grew up like a lot of you. I'm a second generation Indian. So my parents arrived in the UK in the 70s, and like many Indian Gujarati families, we had a news agent when I was growing up. And the shop was everything, because my mum and dad sort of worked around the clock, and you know, some of you, most of you know, our parents, you know, gone through a lot to give us the opportunities to help us, you know, do what we can do now. But my mum and dad had newsagents, which meant I had to get up at ridiculous hours in the morning to deliver newspapers. Not that I minded, because all I ever used to do was read the newspapers backwards, because I was just obsessed with sport. And reading newspapers backwards whilst supposedly delivering them gave me my passion for the written word. And I always wanted to write about sport, and I just thought it's the most amazing thing possible. How you can contrive so many different scenarios using words, and you know, the texture of the English language is incredible. It's effectively an artist's easel, and it's the way that you paint that picture, the way that you tell stories, and I've always been fascinated by that. And sport as a narrative, you know, it goes beyond passion. It changes people's lives. It has a connection, you know, like music, that, you know, it's almost intangible. You can't actually describe what that is. So, you know, once that hook gets you, it's really difficult to think about anything else. But my issue was that I had no idea how I would get a career working in the newspaper industry. So I wasn't a particularly brilliant student. I got very average GCSEs. I got very average A-levels. But I got to university, and I did an economics and politics degree at the University of East Anglia, which is in Norwich. And it was there that I thought, okay, what am I going to do about my career? You know, what do I want to be? And obviously, you know, being Indian, there's the pressure of going into professional, you know, the professions, let's say, you know, so lawyer, accountant, doctor, you know, whatever it was. And I knew right from the start that that wasn't for me. But then, you know, it's like, how do I get into the industry? So I ended up applying for, after I graduated, I applied for something called a postgraduate diploma in newspaper journalism at the Trinity and All Saints College, which is in Leeds. And I had little experience, but I got accepted. So I think they took a bit of a punt on me, which was great. And that gave me the opportunity, and that's effectively the platform to launch my career. And it was during that course that I got a internship with the BBC. It was a 5-week work placement. But this is just to show you how old I am. This was back in 1999. So this was very much at the dawn of the internet. I know most of you weren't even born then. So, you know, this was when we had dial-up, and it was even worse than dial-up. So, the internet was just this thing that, you know, it wasn't even nascent. Nascent's not even the right word to use, but the BBC were starting to invest towards it, because they saw that there was something in it, but they weren't quite sure what it was. So I got a job as a trainee journalist, and that was on the back of a successful work placement. And then from there, I've only ever had two jobs, and one's at the BBC, so the BBC Sport website, and the other is now with Livewire Sports. So I spent 11 and a half years at BBC Sports. So I worked across pretty much every single major sporting event you can think of, which I still can't quite believe now. And that was my first ever job. So World Cups, Cricket World Cups, Rugby World Cups, Olympics, Paralympics, Tour de France. You know, it was basically a sport lover's dream. But I kind of realised that I wasn't made for management at the BBC. It's a greasy pole, let's say. I kind of realized that I could happily carry on doing what I'm doing, but not progress. And I wasn't pushing myself. But fortunately, the BBC relocated to Manchester. Sorry, Natalie, but I didn't fancy moving to Salford. So I used that opportunity, along with four other colleagues, to launch Livewire. So we pitched ourselves as what we would then call a digital agency. It was slightly different now, but it's effectively providing content for other people. So when we're at the BBC, we used to do a lot of the live text commentaries. So as sport is going on, you've got someone who's typing away frantically, probably not watching sport because they're looking at their keyboard typing, but you know, that was the way it was. But that real kind of surge in live content made us realize that live sport, and in particular, how digital was evolving, there was a brilliant opportunity to provide this sort of service, but for commercial partners or for other media organisations and things like that. So when we set the company up, the BBC background made a massive difference. It gave us it helped us get a foot in the door, and we're very fortunate, and our first clients were the Premier League. But that was also serendipitous as well, because they needed an interim team because they'd just come out of a contract with their previous suppliers. So we helped launch their then new website back in 2011. But the real interest for us was on Twitter and Facebook, which they had registered but never used. And at that time, the NBA and the NFL in the US were starting to grow these audiences very quickly. But the Premier League back then didn't have a voice. It didn't communicate officially with fans because it's 20 clubs that come together. So it's a corporate organisation. That was their argument. We don't have a voice. But when you're talking to directly to consumers, you need to have a voice or a personality. So it took a long, long time to persuade them to basically take the pedal or to take the padlock off those channels. But then once we did that, and once they realised they could grow an audience very quickly and globally, these amazing opportunities suddenly started to come up. So as the Premier League started to grow, as did our other kind of satellite services around that. So we were working with Wimbledon, which was then one person who was doing the live text commentary. But then as the social platforms grew, where you could start putting video and doing more graphic design and everything else, those services had to expand as well. And we've had to evolve our agency as the capabilities have expanded. And a lot of that is down to mobile consumption, but also platform development. So to cut a very long story short, we've, in the space of 9 years since we set the company up, we work with nearly 40 rights holders, broadcasters, and brands. So biggest clients are Premier League, Wimbledon, Channel 4, Formula One, Amazon Prime, Video Sports, the FA, so lots of really well-known clients. Our core services range from, we're driven by content, so content is what we're good at, but that can also mean lots of different things. So it's about the business objectives of why we're creating content. So for an organisation, why do we need to grow an audience? It's to think about how we can earn more commercial return, so whether that's through better sponsorship deals and things like that, all the way through to fan engagement, really cool video design, motion graphics, and then the important stuff, which is the analytics. It's to understand how the content works, what can we do better, and everything else. So the company's 40 full-time staff. There was five of us that started it back in 2011, so we've grown 50% over the last few years as we've gone through a real growth spurt. Got lots of really good freelancers as well, so we've got a really big family, if that's the right word to use. So I'm every time I tell the story, I still can't quite believe that happened to me, but I'm very lucky, and I guess now is the time where I need to start thinking about how I can pass some of my knowledge or help people to break into the industry, because believe it or not, not everyone looks like us in the world that I work in. And that is still something that rankles me, because that hasn't changed in 21 years. And hence the reason why we started the scheme.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing this. Your career journey sounds like incredibly exciting. You've been at the forefront of these opportunities that happen, like the move to Salford and the push in technology. It seems like you've had these challenges that you've turned into a really exciting opportunity. And I definitely want to ask you a bit more about where you see Livewire moving forward with your diversity in the digital media scheme, because that's something that just looks really exciting to us. Tell us a bit about what's pushed you to create that scheme and why you think it's important that media embraces that now.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I said previously, it's the fact that, that all the decision makers are you know, pale male and stale, effectively. And it's, you know, you look at the stars, the people who are driving that commercial revenue, they don't look like the people that are in the boardroom. And that's something that really annoys me. And it's something that needs to change. And it's not about tokenism either. It's about driving meaningful change. So the scheme, this is the first year that we've run the scheme, and we've learned a hell of a lot from it. But I think what we want to do for next year is start a leadership program, because what we want to do is basically fast track people, to be able to fast track them to come in, to go into decision making roles, because that's the only way that meaningful change can happen. So, you know, what we're trying to do at the moment is help people make their first or second move into the industry. But really, it's the second and third rungs, or the fourth rung. So that's the second is like, the first is like the sort of your first role within the sport industry. The second is like a management role. So, and it's, you know, managing a few people. Then it's like a head of department. And then that goes up into the C-suite. So what we want is more people into levels 3 and 4. And so if we can help create that foundation, pass on that knowledge that we've got from 9 years, helping, you know, effectively fast track some people into roles that they wouldn't ordinarily have had access to, then I think, you know, we're on the right track. But equally, my own agency doesn't look like how it should, or what, in my eyes anyway. So I also want to use this use the scheme as a recruitment grounds for Livewire, because, you know, diversity in thinking means so much more than, you know, skin color. And it, to be honest, that's the other thing I should have said from the start. It's not just about skin color. It's disability, age, geographical location. So basically what we said was that anyone who's faced a barrier to get into the industry, you know, we want to try and help them and overcome those barriers. So, you know, we've got a really good diverse group. They're 12. They come from different backgrounds, and they get on really, really well, even though they've never actually met, because the program kicked off just as lockdown started. So we've used our own internal knowledge. So we've paired each individual person with a Livewire mentor, as well as using expertise from outside the industry. So using our contacts to help them grow in terms of knowledge. We've also set them a challenge of creating their own agencies and coming up with what we call a request for proposal. So we made up a fictitious seven-a-side football tournament, but gave them this brief about, okay, we want to create best-in-class social channels, but we need a strategic vision, we need a communications vision, and we need a commercial vision. So basically, here's all the learning that you've had over the past 4 months. Go away and process it. And they actually had to present it to a panel of, you know, very intimidating industry leaders, who were amazed that these guys were the first time they'd ever done it. And they actually treated them. Some of the feedback they got was the sort of thing I would expect from Livewire. So, you know, they didn't hold back, but I mean that in a really positive way. So, the next stage for us now is to start helping those guys get into roles. So again, using our contacts, and it's not the best time, as you guys know, in the world at the moment. So, you know, whatever opportunities we can help facilitate, then, you know, that's us doing our job, I guess. But, you know, ultimately in years 2, 3, 4, hopefully 5, even more, it's being able to say that that person who is now chief executive of a football club or whatever came through our diversity program and learnt the nuts and bolts with us. And, you know, that again, it's not about financial return. It's way beyond that. It's about doing something that needs to be done.
Wow, thank you. Like I said before, it's so incredibly exciting to hear this initiative. And I really like the way that you've addressed the idea of diversity, breaking it down to what does it actually mean. We see a lot of situations where diversity can be quite surface level, like it can mean just one thing, like just skin colour or religion, whereas it seems that you've really tried to think about like accessibility, and I've heard you mention a geographical location, so it's really nice to hear that. Is there anything that while you were looking is that kind of surprised you? Because when I heard a talk that you've done on a podcast, you mentioned studied informality, and that was something that I've not heard before. I've just heard it as like a class issue. you, and having a vernacular way to describe that's been really interesting to hear that.
Yeah, there's a brilliant, brilliant documentary on, I hope it's still on iPlayer. It's called How to Break the Glass Ceiling, and it's presented by Amal Rajan, who's the BBC's media editor. And he follows six or seven graduates, all from different backgrounds, into the careers they want to go into. And he talks a lot about some of the problems that some of the guys face, despite their academic abilities. And one of them is quite a posh lad who wants to break into the media industry. And one of the reasons he can do that is because of his ability to be able to behave in a certain way, even though he doesn't know the person. It's because they come from like the same sort of background. And one of the things that was brought to my attention was, you know, when you sort of see something, you think, oh yeah, I see a little bit of myself in there. But what it is that person comes from a similar background, probably went to a school that wasn't far from you, probably knows someone that you do. There's a lot of that comes from familiarity. And obviously, if you are not of that world, you don't know about the way to dress. So this was something else as well, was the particular trainers that you wear, or the brand of T-shirt that you wear. All those little things have a unconscious knock-on effect in terms of how you fit into an environment. So yeah, that is it's a fascinating area. And there's a book by a guy called Dr. Sam Friedman, which I haven't read, but one of my colleagues has, and he says it's from a sociological perspective, it's a really complex subject. And it, you know, I think they studied their groups in the city, so mainly around finance. But I would argue the sport is probably even worse in terms of the administrative side of it. So, yeah, I mean, I've had my eyes open to a lot of things that I previously didn't know about. So, obviously, there's a lot about unconscious bias as well, which, you know, I think a lot of people have been shocked. But I don't know if any of you guys have done the Harvard unconscious bias tests. Have you tried it? Hang on, I'll bring a link around to you guys later. But it's really interesting because I did the one about Asians first, and it said that I didn't have an unconscious bias to Asians. I was like, okay, I'm happy with that. And then I did the one about Black people, and it said I did. And you know, that kind of made me angry because I was like, no, but I'm not. So it's actually made me sort of question my own thinking and my own processing, because I'm like, but I know that's not the case, but maybe there's something deeper inside me. So, you know, I mean, it's made me kind of realize that I'm not as kind of perfect as I think I am. So I think, you know, that's the other part of this as well, that I've probably got things inside of me that aren't quite right. But I guess I think the most important thing is, and I've said this to clients, is that, you know, the first thing you have to do is admit that you have a problem. And I think once you admit that there is a problem, and that's, you know, in terms of the people that work within your organization, if they all look the same, then there's a problem. And what are you going to do about that? And I think that's one of the things that I've been trying to tell our clients who've been asking about it, you know, in terms of what can we do to be better. And I think, you know, the first thing is, okay, what, you know, look at your staff, what you're missing, and how can we help to, you know, potentially plug a gap or bring a different view? Because if everyone thinks the same, you know, effectively, you're not really going to advance as much as you think you are.
Wow, thank you. That's really fascinating, that the Harvard unconscious bias test, because it is something that is, you've got to put yourself in a vulnerable position to realise the bias that you have. And I think it's something that we can all benefit from. Understand that if we want to address an issue, understanding if we have how we play a part in that them ourselves. Thank you for sharing that.
Equally, I do question the actual process in terms of doing it on your computer, because it's about finger placement and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, I was more annoyed about the way that they've done it, but equally, it has made me question my own, you know, thinking as well. But, you know, I guess that's, if it provokes some form of action, then, you know, it's already doing its job.
Well, thank you. There's so much to even just digest and talk about what you've said. I'd love the opportunity to open up to our young people and the staff members who have anyone that has a question they would like to ask. Now is a really good opportunity. Would anyone like to ask a question? I think, is that Jao? You're on that straight away. So jump in.
I was just listening to you talk and like a question popped up in my head. It's like, when you start out a business like this, or when you want to go into like the world of like media and like live stream and stuff, what kind of skills do you need, and like what kind of skills do you need to like improve on?
That's a really good question. I actually think it's a lot harder now than it was in my day, because when I started, all I knew about was print journalism. So, you know, I knew how to write. I knew nothing about video, and I knew nothing about audio, and I knew nothing about graphic design or content optimization. But I kind of had to learn all of that on the job. Now, you're kind of expected to know all of this, or you are expected to have done the reading or have had the experience to be able to process all of that. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what I've learned is on the job and through clients. So, you know, this week, for example, we're launching a podcast with the IPC, the International Paralympic Committee, tomorrow. But I've done very little to nothing on podcasts. So this week, I've just basically immersed myself on, you know, how the podcast process works in terms of distribution, because ultimately what everyone wants is as many people to listen to it as possible. But, you know, what can we do to help facilitate, you know, better SEO, you know, better search capabilities? What are the type of subjects that people search for in podcasts and things like that? So, yeah, I mean, that probably doesn't answer your question, Jack, but I think a lot of it depends on your own proactivity, because, you know, especially now that there is a lot of information that is out there. YouTube is always my first port of call. So I taught myself how to video edit, which I love now, although I don't get as much time to do it as I did previously. But a lot of that was just going on YouTube and then how do I do this on Premiere Pro, which is the editing software that we use at work. And yeah, it enabled me to pick up lots of new skills and another thing. Sorry, that's my dog that's just nipped, that's popped in. Say hello. No, she's not bothered. Yeah, so most of it I'd recommend, you know, just use the resources that are out there. And, you know, if you're struggling, you can't find anything, just, you know, drop me a line. I'm more than happy to help.
Thank you. That's a really good question, Jal, and a really good answer, Pranav. Thank you. Does anyone else would like to ask a question?
I've got one.
Go for it, Osei. Ask your question.
So I heard that you were mentioning that you hire some freelancers. I wanted to like ask, just like, how are you managing now during this pandemic, especially with your freelancers?
It's tough. It's really difficult because a lot of those freelancers have become friends as well. I mean, obviously, as you know, sport basically stopped, and a lot of our work stopped, which meant that, you know, there were quite a few sleepless nights about how we would make ends meet, and also the significant amount of people that depend on us for a living. So we treat our freelancers as we do our full-time staff. There really isn't a distinction between them. So we made sure we looked after them as much as our staff. So, you know, a lot of these guys have been with us for 4 or 5 years. So, you know, that's having a really good, strong relationship with people means that, you know, you want to make sure that they're looked after. So I think we made a sacrifice as a company in terms of, you know, money to make sure that our freelancers were looked after, and making sure that we paid up for things that have been cancelled, because for freelancers, it's effectively booking your calendar up and saying, okay, I'm not available that time, and turning down other work. So, you know, when you realise they make sacrifices for you, if you do something similar, that, you know, it all kind of evens itself out. But I know a lot of freelancers have really struggled, especially cameramen. We use a lot of cameramen, freelance cameramen, and their work has effectively stopped for 5 months, although it's starting to come back again. So, yeah, it's not an easy time to be a freelancer. And also the government's scheme to help freelancers isn't particularly easy, especially if you've only if you're new to it. You need kind of 3 years of accounts, and it takes the kind of average means of your profits. So it's not easy. So yeah, we've got a lot of sympathy for freelancers, and I want to make sure that we look after them as much as possible. But I know a lot of other companies that don't share the same philosophy.
Thank you. That's a really good question, I say. Would anyone like to ask another question? You're welcome, Natalie. Go for it.
Oh, thank you. That was brilliant. Really enjoyed listening to that. Your passion is so apparent. I loved what you said at the beginning, that you read newspapers backwards, which reminds me really of my childhood with my dad, who was a huge United fan. Always that was the first thing paper read from back to front. So I'm just wondering if you've got any... Where that sporting passion came from? Were you from a sporting family, or did you particularly enjoy watching or participating in sport? And if so, you know, have you carried that on now?
I still read newspapers back to front, although I very rarely pick up a newspaper these days. So yeah, I mean, I've always loved sport, and I don't really come from a sporty family. Neither my brother or sister were particularly sporty, and neither my mum and dad. But cricket was always my first love, along with football, and I also played rugby at school as well. So those were my kind of core sports, and yeah, I mean, I think it just. I don't know, there's something about sport that basically just sort of has this hook in you. And once you get that love for it, it kind of spreads to other sports. But I've also found as I got older, I've got into other sports. And I don't watch as much cricket anymore, one, because it takes up tons of time. But I've really got into NFL, and I've really got into horse racing, which were two sports that I had no interest 20 years ago. Working within the media, you kind of get a bit, what's the word? Neutral to everything. So sometimes, you know, as you said, the passion definitely does come through, and that's what drove me into the industry. But after a while, there is a healthy dose of cynicism. So it's quite nice to kind of be fresh into something that you don't know about, to pique curiosity. And also because there's sports that require a little bit more cerebral knowledge. So it kind of pushes your own, you know, challenge to try and learn something new. And I think that's always something that's driven me, because if I just kept doing the same things over and over again, I'd be so bored. So I kind of need to keep myself occupied, and new sports help me do that.
That's great. Thank you very much. Great to know that. But over to if anyone else has got a question. Thank you so much.
Have you got one, Sat? Yeah, go for it, Sat.
So the first one I was thinking, maybe Angus, maybe you could tell Pranav a bit about your YouTube channel and a bit about your animations, and some advice around that, maybe.
If I wanted to do like media sort of stuff as a job, would it be still worth doing in the future?
That's a really interesting question. I'm glad someone's brought it up. I'm quite vocal about media study degrees, so like journalism degrees, because I don't think they are worth it. I've seen quite a lot of people, and it's quite a lucrative industry in terms of journalism courses, and those like football journalism courses and things like that. I would, if you're into animation, Angus, and especially stop motion, you want to make a profession of that, I would recommend looking into specific arts universities or colleges that specialise in that. I think it's the University of Creative Arts in Farnham that have a world-class animation department. I think Middlesex University as well. And we have a team. So our creative teams, there's seven people in it, and we've got four animators who are all incredibly talented. And they do... Have you ever heard of rotoscoping?
Not really, no.
Okay. Look it up. It's a form of animation where you almost trace over footage and then make it move. It's incredible. But they use a program called Adobe After Effects to make stuff move. And for me, if you're young, creative, and want to go into the industry, I would absolutely recommend you learning, sort of starting to learn or master Adobe After Effects, because it's an incredible program. And it is in high demand because the stuff that works on social platforms at the moment is the stuff that moves around the really cool, flashy edits and things like that. So, yeah, look into it. So it's called Adobe After Effects. It's an incredible platform, and I know about 1% of it, and it still blows my brains in terms of how complex it is. But if you can start doing that at 15, 16, Angus, I guarantee you, doors will open up for you. So wholeheartedly recommend it, and especially for your YouTube channel as well. So there's lots of other animation programs, but they're a lot more specialist. But I would say the best intro would be After Effects. And there's tons and tons of tutorials on YouTube.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You touched on unconscious bias, and I thought that was really important. And I was wondering whether you've got any advice for the young people and how to deal with that if they encounter it when they are going into employment, if they are in school, or, you know, going into situations in their lives where they're trying to get those opportunities and people are, yeah, showing signs of that. How would you go about that? Or is there any advice in your career that you think might be helpful to share with them?
Yeah, it's a really tough one because I guess I look at it from a managerial experience as opposed to, you know, the most important thing for me is to ensure that none of that affects my thinking. But, you know, I guess the world is changing, and I think people realise they can't continue in the way that things have been going for the last however many long years. But equally, I don't know whether this is relevant or not, but I've learned more from bad managers than I have good managers. And I think I'll always style my management on things that people or behaviours where from my own experiences were just wrong. And I always said to myself, well, I'm not going to do that when I manage people. So communication is a big thing. The BBC, I mean, I love the place, but terrible, terrible management. And I guess it depends on the relationship that you have with the people that you work with. And a lot of it is about confiding and being able to say what you think, but not be prejudicial in terms of your career or anything else. So I think we just have to face facts that this happens only to us. And how do we deal with that? And the support network that we have around us, and having the confidence to approach people and have difficult conversations, because all managers, all good managers, should be cognizant in those types of conversations and being able to broach subjects that are, you know, potentially divisive and can cause issues in companies, but they're really, really important. So I've probably made a very terrible attempt at trying to answer your question, Rachel, but I think, yeah, it's a lot of it is down to your own judgment and confidence in the person that you need to confide in. And yeah, I guess if you don't feel you have that, I guess it's reaching out to other people outside of that and to seek advice. And, you know, these guys are probably the best people that you can speak to about that, because it's an incredibly important subject and, you know, will have a significant effect if, you know, things are not done as they should be.
No, that was great. Thank you. It's a difficult one to kind of summarize on, isn't it? There's not necessarily a stock answer. So I think that with the change you're making anyway, I guess it's highlighted within your actions. And I'm hoping that's something that the young people will be able to kind of take away to, you know, making those positive changes for positive affirmations really important. Thank you.
No, don't be afraid. Yeah, I mean, equally, don't be afraid to say, you know, when things aren't right, but just make sure that, you know, you look after yourself as well in the process.
Thank you. Some really, really positive advice there. Sat, did you have a question that you want to ask?
Yeah, if that's all right, please. It's more sort of, one was on behalf of sort of a lot of the young people on the call, so for like Micaiah and Josh and people thinking about doing work experience or just sort of coming to the end of school now and sort of thinking about A-levels and stuff like that. And just sort of, have you got any advice, if even if people haven't sort of specifically chosen or know what they're going to definitely go into? And like you said, sometimes you don't have to go into media to go into media, you don't have to study it per se. And just sort of wondering if you had any sort of advice on sort of how to get work experience and getting into sort of an industry, even if it's journalism as well, which is getting harder, but people have a passion for it. And then I've got a silly little last question, which is, have you ever been in any surreal moments? Like, it's really cool when you're passionate about stuff, and have you ever got to meet any of your heroes, or have you been in any awkward situations? Yeah, or like anything funny, really. We like to sort of finish on funny stuff as well, so.
Okay, let's start on your first question. So, break into the industry. So, I think now, because of all the various different programs that are available to you, you know, you don't need to have a specialist computer. You can, everything is on subscription software. So Adobe Creative Cloud is, for me, the best bit of kit to try and master, because there are so many different programs within that. We use Premiere Pro, Photoshop, and After Effects on a hourly basis. It's the foundation for the creative and video, our studio offering. So, you know, if you are creative, and if video, photography, motion graphics and animation are your real passions, or you see that as a potential avenue for a career, then I would absolutely recommend learning a few of those programs as early as possible. I mean, if it's the written word or managing social media channels, then I think one of the key thing is to understand. So what I always say is, yes, you know, yes, you love using Instagram, but from a sporting perspective, ask yourself, why is that organisation on Instagram? So, Sat, you're an Arsenal fan. Sorry, I'm a Spurs fan. But neither of us have got anything to chat about anyway. So, what I would say, you know, I would say to someone, okay, you're an Arsenal fan, great, yeah, you love the content they put out, but why are they doing that? What is in Arsenal's benefit to create that video, to tweet that tweet? What is it that they're doing? It's about building the Arsenal brand. It's a global brand. It's about opening up sponsorship opportunities. What's their strategic vision? You know, what do Arsenal want to do that is different to other Premier League clubs and things like that? So it's always to think more strategically about why people are doing this, you know, especially sports organisations. Sell more tickets is a big one. How do they sell tickets? Who do they sell tickets to? How can they use social platforms to sell tickets? It's those questions. And then you can talk about what makes good content, because good content will then help drive those business objectives, whether that's selling tickets and everything else. But ultimately, I think, you know, if you want to go into that social media world, those are the kind of fundamental questions that I would urge you to look into before you sort of think about the content.
It's really helpful.
Oh, yeah, and the other one.
Any funny stories, yeah.
Surreal situations. I mean, off the top of my head, there was Sports Personality of the Year years and years and years ago, where I got in on the crowd. I was in the studio because they had a few empty seats, and, you know, woe betide the BBC for having empty seats at Sports Personality of the Year Award. And it was the year David Beckham won. I think it was 2001. And as I was walking down, it was just after he'd got the award. I walked down and suddenly I was next to him. So I was next to Bex. And I kind of looked up and I suddenly got surrounded by this group of people that surrounded him, but with absolutely no intention of putting myself in the middle of it. There's Boris Becker, Sir Alex Ferguson, I think it was Kevin Keegan, I can't remember, it was just like, it was just basically a who's who of like the most famous people in sport, and me. And it took me about a minute or two to try and get out of this huddle, but it was really surreal, and I still can't quite put my finger on what I was doing there and how I ended up there. But yeah, that was one. And the other is a really weird one. I was lucky enough to go to the Super Bowl 5 years ago. And we got a police escort to the stadium. So I was on a coach, and literally they closed the roads for me and about 10 other people in this coach. And I just thought to myself, do you realise that I am completely insignificant? But yeah, apparently they did that for the media. So I was like, I still couldn't quite get my head around that. But other surreal moments, I think that is it. I've had Chris Jordan, who's played for England, bowl at me at 90 miles per hour, and I didn't even see what he was bowling at me. So, some amazing experiences, and I'm incredibly lucky. I still can't quite believe I've been paid for it. So,
Oh, the Beckham story sounds like fun. Like that, yeah, that sounds very cool as well.
We really appreciate making the time to talk to us, honestly. Thank you. Can we have a massive round of applause? Can everyone come on the mic and give a massive round of applause to Pranav?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time, guys. And, you know, apologies if I did rant on a bit. But, I'd love to stay in contact, help, you know, and hopefully in the new world when we can be in places together. I'd love to come and see you guys and, you know, meet some of you, and anything that we can try and do to help inspire you and reach you, you know, achieve your dreams. And, you know, the world that we work in now, it's so much more direct, and you can do it from your bedrooms. But, you know, if there's any way that we can help facilitate or, you know, bring attention to clients and things like that, I'll try and do my best. That doesn't mean that I can magic things, but, you know, I'll always try.
Thank you. That genuinely means a lot. And even just the talk today is like really inspired us. And I think we've got some really good tips for our YouTube channels, for Angus's one, our one, and some advice for Jao and Ose. So we really appreciate that. Thank you. And it would be nice if we could, any more questions we have, if we could send them your way to get some tips.
Please do. Please do. Thanks, guys. Take care, everyone. Lovely to meet you all.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much, Pranav. That was such a nice discussion. You inspired us so much while we spoke about that, and also gave us some really good advice. It was really nice to hear your perspectives, your experience, and just share your career journey so openly and honestly with us. Like, I think we all needed a moment after that session to kind of digest everything that you spoke about. But honestly, thank you. That was really fun. Well done, young people. I think your questions, like I said at the start, were super professional. I couldn't even think of questions better than that. I wrote out a bunch of them and they were nowhere as good as the questions you guys thought of on the spot. So I can tell that you guys are brilliant journalists already. So I think a career in media is going to suit every one of you. But until then, we'll just keep getting our advice and making our podcasts. Everyone who listened to this at home, let us know what you thought of this. Send us an email, you know, reach out to us on social media. Tell us what you liked about this episode, what you'd like us to talk about next, and also some like future participants and guests. But thank you everyone for listening and staying engaged. If you want to find out more about Renaissance Foundation, head over to our website, renaissance-foundation.com. There you can see all our social channels and you can find out how to support us. We recently had news that things are not going to be looking on the up in terms of lockdown in London, which is going to add a further strain on our capacities and the support that the young people need. They're going to need more support moving forward. So if you want to help us help young people, you can donate to us. And if you want to see the exciting work the young people involved with Renaissance Foundation are doing, like I said, head over to our social channels where you'll see lots of activity going on. And until then, stay tuned for a new episode.